Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to another edition of That's So Cincinnati, our favorite podcast out of the Cincinnati Inquirer. Well, there's a lot of them, so favorite's probably not right. But
Paul, your voice has changed.
All right, it's actually Sherry Coolidge. Paul is doing something way more fun. No offense. He's at the Super Bowl, right?
Is it warmer there?
I mean, anything's warmer.
This is how much I do not pay attention to the NFL. I do read our Bengals coverage because I like the Inquirer and I like our Bengals reporters. I'm just not into the NFL. I don't even know where the Super Bowl is.
I believe it's in Atlanta. I saw a story today they were going to get hit by a snowstorm, which after all of the debacle last week with all of the referee calls and everything seems a little bit like an act of God.
Oof. Anyway. Well, it's good to have you as my co-host today. You've been one of our best guests.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show. That's what we call you, friend of the show. What do we want to talk about today? Sherry, by the way, for our new listeners, which we continue to gain listeners, thank you. Tremendous feedback, by the way, on our show last week. We had our editor, Bro Love, in to talk about our CovCath coverage, and the response to that has been tremendous. It's pushing our most listened to podcast so far in the 19 episodes. This is our 20th episode, so thank you for supporting us. We're still doing this because you're listening. But Sherry, for those of you who are just new, is our City Hall watchdog reporter. And we all know the Cincinnatians love their City Hall coverage and are super into their local politics here. And nobody covers it better than Sherry does.
I am blushing.
I was getting ready to say, I guess I just started to say, but. But when it comes to your coverage. The but, I guess, is when you start talking about City Hall. I was getting ready to ask you, but are they doing anything right now? Like, what is going on at City Hall?
You know, honestly, like, I'm kind of waiting for the year to gear up. We had, you know, last year was not a good year.
Yeah.
We had, like, a lot of troubles with our 911 system that was, you know, everything was overshadowed by the text scandal that was going on. At the end of the year, we saw a flurry of activity with some, you know, help for seniors from the Sittenfeld camp and some eviction prevention out of Landsman's office and with some Tamaya, too. And so now it's like, what is the next big thing? I do not have an answer to that question, but really, like, what's the next thing? And quite frankly, we're kind of going back in time because if everyone remembers, there was like a lot of like, you know, fanfare with the idea that we were going to get a Major League Soccer team and everything was amazing. And this is coming. And we actually just had a groundbreaking, except, you know, things kind of sailed through Planning Commission. But they can't bring it to the floor to actually vote on it because FC Cincinnati doesn't have a key piece of land. And, I mean, that's where the things are headed. It's like, what's going to happen with this?
So you wrote a really good piece over the weekend about the city selling land for a dollar, literally a dollar, and how they've done this through the last 2 years, I think, of?
We went back five mostly years, because I could remember Dunhumby.
That's right.
The 8451 for people who are listening. I can remember that land was sold for a dollar. And that is
prime real estate in downtown sold for a dollar.
And nobody raises an eyebrow. And nor, honestly, should they? When there's good development projects, like, why wouldn't the city give the land? That's win, win, win. Like, everybody, the companies, the citizens, the city. And that is a great thing. And I've seen it time and time again. But for some reason, right now, FC Cincinnati needs a piece of land owned by the city. It is a police parking lot right now. And it's appraised at $1.6 million. And the city's like, sounds good. Let's sell it for $1.6 million.
What? So is this what is the holdup right now? Is it that FC doesn't want to pay the 1.6? FC was told they could get it for a dollar. The votes aren't there. The majority of city council saying, no, you're going to pay the full price. Where are we at right now? Like, where's FC? Where's City Hall on this whole thing?
Well, you know, the team contends that this was always part of the incentive deal, which is $34 million for infrastructure uses. And then the team is going to build a stadium, $250 million themselves in the West End. It has to be costing more than that now, but we're at a $250 million number. And with two gigantic, like, you know, developments, in the plans, like coming to the West End as part of things, even if we don't have a lot of details about that yet. And it's kind of a complicated deal. They need one more. They bought most of these land from private owners. Yep. You know, we learned a lot from like Tri-State Wholesale. You know, they had to buy their land and they had to move. And but this has been a little bit more complicated with since police, you know, the police do need somewhere to park.
Yeah.
And so it's like, what is this deal going to look like? And the team contends, well, you know, move the police parking, build parking. But, you know, we do need this land. And just no one really can come to a consensus.
I guess I won't put you on the spot to say this because I can say it as a columnist. But it's frustrating to see, you know, when I think probably from a public standpoint or the fans standpoint, definitely we thought, hey, we already had the groundbreaking. We already had the announcement of Major League Soccer. We're already down the road. We're going to open a new stadium in 2021. But oops, behind the scenes, there's quite a bit of things still to work out. Is there any, I mean, do you see a big fight coming down the pike here on this? Or, do you think this is going to, so a fight and do you think this isn't going to change our getting new stadium, right? I mean, that's a big question.
The big problem is, I mean, soccer is coming. They're building a stadium. Right. Like, you just can't stop that right now. And, you know, five members of council said we would like to do this and signed off on it. And it's rolling down the hill right now. So, but it's going to have to be a big fight because you cannot build the stadium without this land.
Yeah.
And they have to break ground, too, by March. And it's like, why do we care? Like, the stadium's not supposed to be built for two more years, but it is on a very strict timeline.
Yeah.
Apparently, it takes a long time to build a Major League Soccer stadium or any stadium. March, it has to start pouring a foundation in March.
Well, you're also wedging, you're putting a brand new massive soccer stadium in an urban dense area. This is not a greenfield out in the suburbs where you can just literally just go out there and start, you know, digging a foundation. You've got a lot of,
I mean, wedge actually is a good word because, you know, the Jehovah Witnesses, they're right on the edge. The ballet's on the edge. That Tri-State Wholesale building that might be a parking garage someday. All of these things are really close. It's not like it isn't a giant open field. This is close quarters and everything has to fall. It's like a puzzle. Everything has to fall into place. If one piece doesn't fit, it's not going to happen.
You know, I'll say this before we jump to our interview segment. It's very frustrating, especially when you look at just what happened in Columbus, where the Columbus City Council and the Franklin County Commissioners all voted, I believe it was unanimous vote, separate votes, but City Hall, their City Council voted to keep the Columbus Crew and to build them a new stadium. And if I'm correct, they approved them to give them $50 million. Dollars just from the city, and then I believe it was another 50 from the county, and then the state gave them 15 million. And everyone seemed to be on the same page, and yet here we are back in Cincinnati. We've already agreed to a new stadium, and yet we're going to keep nitpicking and fighting, and it's frustrating. But it is, I hate to say it, it is so Cincinnati.
Right. I know, right? And like, and I'm not going to weigh in on whether we should sell this land for a dollar or not, but you have to like go back and say, why wasn't this worked out before?
Yeah,
and why does this have to be a fight now?
Yeah, and I'm not sure if there's any one person to blame for it. Maybe there's some compromise that could be made there, but
we can only look forward, though. That's the thing.
That's a great point. Yes, we can only look forward at this point. Let's stop sitting here thinking about who voted for what for the stadium a year ago or almost a year ago, almost a year and a half ago when you think about the original deal was the Oakley deal. That was November of 2017. Year and 2 months, sorry.
City Hall time is like longer than normal time. It's like dog years or something.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that. Sherry will all be all over it, and she's been all over this story. She's done a tremendous job on this FC Cincinnati stadium deal and their bid and journey to the Major League Soccer, as well as on the sports side, our beat reporter, Pat Brennan. But now let's shift into our interview segment. We have I love our guests today. We have Jamie Schwartz, who is a longtime political consultant here in Cincinnati, president of a group called the Fountain Square Group. They're based in here in downtown, and they handle a lot of political consulting for mostly Republican candidates and on, you know, levy types of issues. So let's bring in Jamie.
All right. It's time for our interview segment here on the TSC pod. We have Jamie Schwartz in today.
Thanks for having me, bud.
Thanks for coming in. I didn't get a chance to introduce you.
Okay, go ahead.
President of Fountain Square Group, political consulting group, longtime Steve Chabot campaign manager, and an all-around good guy.
You're probably the first person to say that, but thank you.
Well, you know, I have to say it on the air. You know what I say about you behind off the air.
Sure do.
Thanks for coming in. It's good to have you. Have you recovered from the – we'll just start right off. Have you recovered yet from that Donnybrook of an election between Chabot and AFTAP?
Not fully. I mean, that really kind of sucked the life out of me last year. So really started – day one kind of went off the rails a little bit and stayed that way until November. So we've been kind of resting, relaxing, and gearing back up for our next fight.
I know. It seems like you've been kind of – laying low. I mean, I know you have a lot of projects, a lot of behind the scenes projects going on, but how in all your years of doing this, and you've done this for what? FSG's been going for what, 8 years, but you've been in politics for going on 20, right?
Yeah, about 20 years.
In all of your years, and you were with Chabot's campaign starting in 2000, where does that election rank in terms of just, what is the word I'm looking for? Roughest, most intense.
You're saying the AFTAB?
Yes. Sorry.
Yeah. No. There's nothing that comes close to what really happened last year. I often believe that the AFTAB campaign got their political playbook from the Frank Underwood School of Politics. We've seen a lot of. Well, we saw a lot of things last year that you kind of see in movies and stuff, and then when it's happening to you in real life, you're like, what the hell's going on? But you know, it was just a long year, and it seemed like something new every week was coming out. And I know you guys dealt a lot with that too, and seeing all the craziness that was going on. But comparing it to the Driehaus races they were tough races. The Cranley races were tough. There's just so much animosity in this one, and I'm very happy to say that we won, and it's been a good time not having to deal with the headaches of that race.
I mean, I cover the Driehaus Chabot race.
Yeah.
And that was back. We had more than one person covering it. And I was like, well, nothing could be, nastier than this, worse than this. This was a lot. And then this one, overshadowed that for sure.
Yeah. I mean, in that race, we were fighting about yard signs being torn down. This thing kind of went to a whole new level.
I mean, let's talk about some of the things we saw, like infiltration in a campaign was an issue, a lot of spending problems. We had an issue with the police with the 911 call. I mean, these were like high level things, and some of them got national attention.
Speaking of the infiltration thing, I know that's not your case. That was the Ohio GOP's case.
Well, one
where
of our
is that at? Do you know where it's
I kind of been out of the loop on it, to be honest with you. I think the OEC is going to do a hearing at the end of February. It's kind of the first one enough to move forward with a formal investigation. But I've kind of been out of the loop on that one.
I know we're almost 3 months removed from that election, but it still feels like people are kind of tired of it, or tired from it. Do you sense that? I mean, we haven't heard anything from AFTAB. He's laid, which is probably the right thing to do from a political standpoint, lay low. And honestly, we haven't heard much from Steve. He just went back to Congress. He still stayed in Congress and doing his thing. Do you think you still sense people are kind of, is there a lot of bitterness or left over from that election still, do you think? Or
I think a little bit. I always like at the end of a campaign like that to get together and have a beer with the other side, just to kind of share war stories and kind of laugh about things that happened. Fortunately, I did get a chance to do that with Jens from AFTAB's campaign.
Yeah.
We've met twice since the election's been over and had really a good conversation. I can't say I would want to do that with everybody that was on his team, but that was nice of him to reach out and do that. And I did it, with the Steve Driehaus races. That was always fun, and that's why I've, kind of made a point to try to build good relationships with Democrats, because they're good people too. They just have different ideas on how to get things done.
And I do think that some of these things, aren't gone. If you tear down a yard sign, that's over. A yard sign got torn down during a campaign.
That's politics. That's campaigning 101.
things that happened here, we're going to be talking about for years. And when it comes to other campaigns and this one and the candidates themselves, like this is, will come up again and again, I think.
I think you're right, Sherry. And I hope people kind of learn a lesson from this and not let it get to a level like that again. I mean, sure, in politics, you know, I'm guilty as anybody in terms of, you know, throwing attacks out there against opponents. And but you can do that in a way where it's above board and it's a hit on an issue and it's not so nasty and personal.
Yeah. The one thing that I always appreciate about you is that you're one of these people who, when you're inside the lines, let's go, let's fight it out. But when the game's over, you shake hands, yeah, say good games, and you move game, good game, and you move on. Are you finding that harder to be that way, or in today's politics, or?
I guess just speaking from my own personal history in this, yeah, a little bit, but. Like I said, it was nice to get together with, you know, one member of his team,
yeah,
to kind of patch things up and, you know, trying to bury the hatchet a little bit, so to speak. But it is, this race, I think, is going to leave some scars for sure, unlike the other races.
Any thoughts on, I mean, I know we're still a little early, but 2020, do you think we'll see a rematch?
Ask Aftab that question. We'll be ready for him. I don't think he wants that fight again.
Yeah. Any have you guys started thinking about 2020 yet?
Oh yeah,
I know it's right. It's
you got to start.
When you're in Congress, you start thinking right away, almost.
Yeah,
right?
We've already had one fundraising event, and got to rebuild that war chest. So Steve's already started that process.
I mean, I know you don't speak for him directly, but you have been with him. You're a longtime confidant, right hand person of Steve Chabot. What was his? Where was his psyche at coming out of that election? Did he feel exhausted, or did he feel energized by it, or what?
You know, he really was energized, especially, you know, August on, when you know the stuff really starts hitting the fan. Steve came, you know, to life in the way he always did in the past. And, you know, after a race like that, everybody's just kind of exhausted and just thankful it's over more than anything else. And Steve certainly was like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you need money because for advertising, right?
Yeah, advertising, you know.
Specialty of yours.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, what is, if you were to say the thing you love to do the most, what would you say? Is it messaging?
It's creating a TV ad that can tell an emotional story. We did an ad, probably my favorite ad of all time was when we did the Union Terminal campaign. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys remember that. When they hired me to do it, I was like, find me somebody with a cool story with this building. And we found this remarkable old woman. Her name was Bev. And we went to her house, interviewed her, and she had this picture of her when she was a little girl. And she was probably 87 at the time, sitting at the fountain in front of the building. So we kind of used that in the opening of her ad. She told her story, how she sent her husband off to World War II and saw him come back in that building, and how it's such an important part of not only her family's history, but our city's. And that got, you know, it was cool. That got an Emmy nomination. And it kind of put us on the map, so to speak. I guess it's locally in terms of, you know, doing good, creative ad work.
Yeah.
Do you have training to do that? Like, how do you know how to do that?
All the years of doing, like, the Chabot races, honestly. And we would write a lot of the scripts, come up with the concept. But I never was the one, you know, producing, shooting, coming up with, like, how to get the ad done. We would hire people for that. And the guys we hired were good, but I kind of was just sitting there, well, heck, I can do this. So we started Prime Media, my second company. And
you love to have fun with these. I mean,
oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, ask Andrew Pappas.
Absolutely. My favorite, and local political junkies, I think, will remember this, but you did the Pappas Mobile.
Pappas Mobile, yeah.
Andrew Pappas, for his day job, owns a dry cleaning company.
Correct.
And he has an old ambulance, yep, as his basically work van.
Yeah.
And you guys, he ran for commissioner in 16, and he turned that into
the Pappas Mobile. Yeah.
And I remember, I think it was the New York Post or New York Daily News picked up the story I wrote about it, and they picked it up. And essentially, you just riffed, or you spoofed off a Knight Rider, or yeah, Knight Rider.
Yeah, it was a spoof. We actually did the whole intro, scene by scene, for that. It took all day to shoot. We're out the Blue Ash Airport most of the time shooting that. And I tell you what, getting that thing to go fast, it took a good 2 minutes to make it hit 80 miles an hour.
And so you hired a stunt driver?
We had to, yeah. It's liability stuff. You have to do that. So we had a stunt driver, had the thing downtown for a little bit, crossing the bridges, and just got a lot of fun shots, but, you know, got him some attention. But again, We like to have fun. Pappas likes to have fun.
It's still a thing. Cruises through the Board of Elections. Yeah, he still pops up now and then.
I think he packed
relief supplies in it, right? Like, sure, he still uses it.
Did you guys win any awards for that ad?
No, I mean,
the stuntman popped a little wheelie.
He did. And we forgot when he was doing that, we actually had one of our production guys in the back of the ambulance, and we totally forgot he was back there. He was fine, but it was just, you know, it was a fun day of production for sure.
Speaking of awards, you guys are up for an award for an ad you had in the 2018 campaign?
Yeah, it's really cool. This one's kind of put us on the national map. It's Campaign and Elections Read Awards. It's in Austin, Texas on February 21st. It's the category is kind of fun. It's biggest villain in a TV ad, and of course it was about AFTAB. So it was our closing ad of the 18 race, and happy to see that it got nominated. Hopefully we get the win.
When's the ceremony?
The 21st, Austin, Texas.
On February, okay.
Yeah, we'll be there.
Speaking of ads, in the day of social media, mm-hmm. you know, people, we continue to complain, or we hear complaints about ads, but do they still work as good as ever?
I mean, people always complain about political advertising, positive and negative. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing this long enough, and the numbers still hold true that the negative stuff does work. People hate it, but if they see enough of it, it'll sink in and it'll really kind of change perception of a candidate. And you look at AFTAB, you know, when we do polling, his fave on fave was pretty strong back in August. But by the time, you know, end of October rolled around, yeah, he was inverted, meaning his negatives were higher than his faves. And that's with a whole bunch of money being spent by AFTAB, too, with him in every ad.
Go ahead.
I mean, I've told both of you, like, I was talking about the campaign to somebody on the phone, and my son piped up and was recited, 10 years old, recited one of the entire ads about AFTAB. And I was like, where are you getting that? And then it, you know, occurred to me that I was being targeted an iPad ad, since he shares an iPad with me, and that he was seeing things that were targeted at me. But it resonated with him, and honestly, just recently, he was still able to recite the entire ad. It stayed with him.
Yeah, I mean, how key are, knowing today when our attention is divided so much more, and you have streaming and less people watching cable TV and local TV, is it harder to target, or is it easier because of, I mean, data analytics such a key thing now.
The targeting we can do now, especially digitally, is really spooky. I mean, we can hone in, get somebody, you know, I don't know how the vendors do this, but we can pick, you know, the kind of voter profile we want and then be able to target through an IP address to make sure that voter is seeing our message. Now, the trick
is scary.
It is scary. It makes me want to go off the grid. But you know, the trick is, like, there's so much of it out there. That's where I like the creative aspect, because you want to do something different, something cool, something that stands out from the rest of the ads that are out there. That's why with ours, with AFTAB, especially the headpieces, we tried to do something a little bit different. We had the Pinocchio nose, where his nose was grown in one of the ads, and then we had trying to kind of make some fun of his good looks and the slick charm. We had the little ping with his teeth in one of the ads for a while. Just stuff like that to stand out.
That's quintessential Jamie Schwartz.
Right there. After his fashion at one point, I believe.
No, we did not. The skinny jeans in the softball ad, that was somebody, some reporter in D.C. commented on that. And
was that a pack ad? Or was that you guys?
No, that was his ad.
That's right, yeah.
But I think
there's so many of them.
You know what? We actually did put that in one of our ads, Sherry. You're right, where we said something about skinny jeans and fake softball games. I don't know.
I want to jump back real quick Sherry has some fun questions for you. I want to go back to some of the partisanship in politics. And we've known each other for a long time. And you were telling me that one of the best lessons you learn in politics as a political consultant came from Steve Driehaus, who ran against Chabot twice and beat him in 2010, right? He lost in 2010, beat him in 2008.
Yes, that's correct.
What did you learn from him?
Well, I was 28 at the time, it's 2008, and I had never lost a big race before. So Sherry, you know, you're familiar with that race. And all year, I was at that point the spokesperson for the campaign as well. And I was taking some just nasty shots at him. And, you know, you're that age, you've won some races, you're kind of arrogant. I certainly fit that mold. And I'll never forget on election night when we lost, and it was late. It was probably, you know, close to 2 a.m. And, you know, suffering a loss like that is just heartbreaking. All your friends just lost their jobs. You feel like you've let everybody down. And then he called, and like, it's like the last person in the world you want to talk to. And especially since I was so mean to him all year, I thought, you know, he could have some fun with me. Mm-hmm. Complete opposite. He was very gracious, very kind, and really kind of said a lot about him. And I was quite frankly surprised by it. And what I like to tell like young political operatives that, you know, are working for me or that I interact with is, you know, that kind of opened my eyes that the other side isn't bad. They're not evil mm-hmm. people. They're just going about things differently than our side is. And you got to respect that. And it really kind of showed me to, you know, kind of work hard to have good relationships with people on the other side of the aisle. You know, where we are in this day and age, that's kind of hard to do, but I still think there are enough people out there that feel that way on both sides where things can still get done.
Well, and you guys have found Square Group also. I mean, you mentioned the museum center levy. Mm-hmm. You do campaigns for issues, which
yes.
a lot of times are bipartisan
sure.
supported.
Yeah.
Before Sherry gets to the fun stuff, do you guys have anything? I know there's no elections this year, really.
What are we going to do with ourselves?
I know.
Guys, I'm bored.
Oh, wait, I know.
Are you bored?
I'm bored.
Well, I mean, are you anything you're able to work on in a non-election year like this? It's kind of...
We do a lot of stuff like with school districts and stuff, and there's always fundraising going on that we're working on. So that's happening. But quite frankly, I just want to get my personal life back together. I mean, I got fat last year and wasn't going to the gym as much, so like, focusing on that and spending more time with my kids is, you know, the priority for me this year.
There's no one that goes out on the campaign trail in any race anywhere that does not gain weight. That's a thing.
Cody Rizzuto lost.
Of course, he's the
He lost
exception.
10 pounds last year. I don't know how he is.
He's getting married.
Well, yes.
Cody, who's one of your employees.
Yes.
Speaking of, are you, I was going to ask you, you still doing that MMA crap or?
Yeah,
whatever you call it.
Yeah. My best friend.
What do you call it? What is it that you do?
Mostly Muay Thai.
Okay.
It's like kickboxing, basically.
Okay.
So once the election ended, I've been back in the gym, getting back in shape, and my trainer and I have decided like we want to do one fight this year. Usually, I have to go to Indiana to do them, and the commission's a little bit relaxed over there, and can, you know.
When was your last fight?
God, I think it was 2 years ago.
Yeah, it wasn't 16, I think.
Yeah, I felt terrible. My dad drew
Did you
about.
Win?
No, I lost a split decision, but okay. I'm still, now you're going to get me fired up because we go out to this guy's gym. It's his home gym in Indiana. I knock him down twice, and then we fought 3 rounds. He never knocked me down once, and somehow they gave the fight to him. Still, that's why I'm going back in the ring this year because I want to go out with a win.
Then I'm glad he beat you.
Thanks.
Jason, I think you should try this.
No,
it's a good workout.
I have challenged Greg Landsman to do a charitable boxing match.
Is this the same thing he does?
No, he just does boxing.
He's boxing.
He should have the advantage on me. So, you know.
Why is that? You can kick.
No, but if I'm going to be a boxing match, I'm going to have
I don't know anything about this stuff. I don't think it's crap. I'm just joking.
I know.
But I think it's great.
If you ever want to step in the ring, we have some fun, Jason. Come on.
I feel like you beat me up enough.
I'll be your trainer.
Without punching me, physically punching
I'll
me.
Stop. That's not true.
What do you got from Sherry?
All right. So Jamie knows my favorite story from the campaign trail, something we didn't write about.
Yeah.
This is a good one.
All right. So I was looking for you after the Trump rally mm-hmm. up in Westchester.
Yes.
Warren County, right?
Warren County.
The
yes.
Warren County Fair was
at the fairgrounds. Looking for you. Where are you?
I was at my favorite pub having a beer.
And I was like, what are you doing there? It was a big night, a lot of stuff going on. And you said, I have to bring a mirror back.
Yes.
You're transporting mirrors around?
Yes.
How come?
Well, I didn't go to, when President Trump landed at Lincoln, we had an event set up for our campaign there. So we had the night before these big events, you got to, you know, working with advanced teams and Secret Service, planning everything out. And like at midnight the night before, they're like, oh no, we don't have a full-size body mirror for the president to use in his holding room. So we're running out like to Walmart or something to get one. And, you know, lo and behold, like he left it there. And like the White House staff left it there. I'm like, oh, I want to get this thing. So we brought it back, put it up at the pub and, you know, I gave it to one of my good buddies up there now because he's such a big Trump fan. But I think it was pretty cool to see Trump's mirror that he used that day at this
He required you to have it, right? Yes. And he needed something else, right?
Diet Coke, but
that's what I would ask for.
He wanted Diet Coke and a mirror.
He wanted two Diet Cokes, but we got the Diet Cokes, and I don't know what the advance guys were thinking, because we can't serve him something that's not been properly vetted. Okay. So they brought their own eventually, but the mirror did stay, and they used it, and we have
it. Wait, even if it's in just a can that's already been sealed?
Yeah. They're pretty crazy about that stuff, so can't blame them.
Well, no, I mean, but that's still like, I mean, these guys are asking you, who they trust as a part of the whole process, to do that, and then you get them a can of Diet Coke at Kroger or whatever.
That's probably just their standard thing. Yeah, so.
It's just, I mean, that's amazing that type of detail is really amazing. It's things people don't know about.
Yeah, it's kind of cool that if you've never been like involved with putting an event together for a president, it's the stuff behind the scenes, like working with law enforcement, caterers, the pipe and drape, every little movement that everybody makes is all orchestrated and mapped out, and it all happens very last minute.
What do you mean by pipe and drape?
This is like the stuff that's, you know, you hang up like that. Because we had our event in a hangar, and you don't want like just all this airplane equipment
seen
by all these donors. So we put curtains, flags, all that stuff. So yeah, it's always fun. To me, it wastes my time, but it's.
But then there are security people that come in week before, days before anyway, and look at the whole area.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times that's, that's when I think the bigger law enforcement groups meet, and you kind of get almost like a heads up of, oh, the president very well could be coming to Cincinnati or whatever.
Yeah, we had about a week's heads up on everything, so.
Yeah.
Did you have more interaction with Trump or the president during the Driehaus Abbott race?
With their team? I would say probably more interaction with the Trump team this time around. I remember we went to the White House to meet with the political team in July. And that's when the races really started to pop and became, you know, outside groups were spending money already. And, you know, we were, you know, clearly going to be targeted through the end. So they, you know, were working with us and consulting with us on, I'd say, a weekly basis.
One last question on that. I think she's so right, is that I think we're going to be talking about this AFTAB Shabbat race for years, and not necessarily.
I hope not.
but I mean, there's going to be things that come up, and it's going to be referenced, like, oh yeah, that happened in this room. And I'm talking about in our local greater Cincinnati politics. Was there anything in that campaign that didn't happen? Was there an issue in that campaign you thought would come up but didn't?
I think everything we thought they would hit. Shabbat on the table.
I'm saying that because I thought the abortion issue would be a bigger deal than it really wasn't a deal at all.
No, I mean, we did some targeted mailing on it for sure.
Okay.
But it's just, you know, looking at, you know, when you do a race like this, you basically test every message you want to use. And, you know, district wide, the abortion message wasn't testing that high. It's the most effective message we had. So that's why we had to go a different route.
Sure, you
have to have did a poll.
Oh, he did.
Self-testing a lot of messages.
I think I've seen that poll. I can't figure out where I've seen
it before. I saw the poll.
We can kind of laugh about it now. And
yeah.
I'm sure there's some people that aren't laughing about it, but.
I'm sure.
It's politics at the end of the day, and it's politics, and certainly in 2018 and 2019, and I think you move on, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to move on. If he pops his head up again.
You wouldn't have me asking you on podcasts about it. You could move on even better. And Cherry, Cherry's over there. She's got a whole list of questions for you about this. We're not even going to get to. I'm kidding.
Uh-huh. Fire away if you want to, guys. But I'm ready to move on. Hopefully AFTAB is too.
Anything else, Cherry?
No, it's good.
You sure?
Yeah.
You guys got like a surprise question for me or something?
No, podcast isn't like that.
Okay.
What'd you say to me when I was like, can you come on the podcast? You're like, oh no.
Yeah.
I'm like, I think that's what people think when I call them. They worry.
You want to sing for us or anything?
Like I can't sing. You don't want that?
Okay.
Yeah. Next time you talk to Boyman, do me a favor and tell him he needs to get our band back together.
Yes. I forgot about
that. That's
band.
The one thing missing in life is.
You referenced Rocky Boyman. Speaking of Rocky, number one, okay, let's talk about the band.
Yes.
Gunmetal Gray.
Which yeah, you know the name. That's right.
I do, because I've discussed this with you and with him. This is a slow 80s rock.
I wouldn't say slow. I'd say you know, hair metal. We played a little bit of everything. Rock metal.
It's not
metal.
Like a Richard Marx type of...
Stop it. just stop it.
Why would you bring that up? You've been mocked relentlessly ever since that came up. You're bringing it up?
So you and Rocky Boyman used to be in this heavy metal hair band.
Yes.
Did you have big hair?
I had a wig and fake tattoos.
That's bad.
That's awful. Really,
no, don't get this band back together.
Yeah, we got to get almost 40 now. What else are we going to do?
Speaking of Rocky, let me ask you a serious question. Yeah. Do you think Rocky will get back into politics?
Sure hope so.
A friend of yours.
Yeah,
you still keep in touch with him?
Yeah.
I was on his radio show yesterday. He was grilling me, too, about CoveCast. No, I'm just kidding. You do think he'll get back into politics? Former Green Township trustee.
Yeah, I think eventually he will. I mean, Rocky has a lot of good things going on with his professional career with the radio show and his work with ESPN. But, yeah. You know, I view Rocky as like our version of AFTAB. Like, he could be like the rising star locally. And, you know, if the timing's right, the race is right, his personal situation's right, you know, I think he'll be ready to delve back into it.
I could see him getting back into it. I think he'd do a good job.
I think so, too. He'd be one of the candidates that I truly would enjoy working for.
That's not a political statement, folks. That's just, I say that about both sides, and I think he's one of those people that I think you would want to promote to get back into politics or get into politics. I think you'd be in it for the right reasons. So.
Yep, I agree.
Well, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate you being here, and tell Cody I said hi.
I will. I'm just mad that you had Jared Cameras on first, but we'll talk about that another time.
I like him better than you.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Thanks. Great to have Jamie in. He was very insightful, and it was fun to sort of talk to him about some of those little intricacies that are behind the scenes things.
Absolutely. Total flashback to the campaign. Was that yesterday? I'm pretty sure it was.
Or was it 3 years ago? It's just, gosh, this stuff is crazy. Anyway, this is the fun segment of the show, and since Sherry is a friend of the show, a special friend of the show, been a guest, three or four times?
My favorite now, part of it, the week, if I'm on it.
Now is a co-host. I would call her, she's carried the show today, I would call her the host of the show. I'm the sideshow, as
Not
Paul would
true.
Probably say. but we want to put Sherry on the spot today. And ask her what her so Cincinnati moment of the week is. Dun, dun, dun.
It's not a rant. I don't want to disappoint anybody, but it is a very Cincinnati
I'll handle
moment.
A rant.
So I'm not from here originally. I came here in 2002 to work here. I'm from Youngstown. And of course, you know, where people went to school is very important here. It's the question you get. That's just the thing here. Where you went to high school.
Yeah.
You know that it's part of this culture, but I watched it unfold this past really 10 days with one of my very best friend's daughters, eighth grade, and had to pick her high school. And this was such a tough decision of which Catholic school to go to. And it's very important to her. And the things that she talked about, like what is their religion like and their mass time and their academics and all the things that went into this decision. And it really answered the question, why we ask this question, because it's a big part of people's lives here. And I watched it unfold and I definitely learned something fun about it, which is Cervati's has frosted cookies in all of the school colors. Someone who's whenever going to Cervati's in the past would be like, oh, green and white cookies or blue and gold cookies. Turns out they're actually for high schools, for the girls, for when they choose their schools and all the different ones, too. And so it's School Choice Week, and that is a very Cincinnati moment in a good way. But I learned a lot about that process this week.
So then how many schools was she choosing from? And are the schools recruiting her? Does that
there's
maybe
scholarships?
I'm asking,
no, it was just like college.
What are the
scholarships? They had to take a test. There's academics that are involved. You know, what are their extracurricular activities? It's very much like the college process.
Good stuff. I can't top that. And honestly, I always let Paul take the So Cincinnati moment of the week. And, you know, Paul, you're going to have to do better to top that one. So if you're listening, by the way, and you're some far off warm locale like Atlanta. Oh, wait, it's not that warm there right now.
It's warmer than here.
This is where I do the curmudgeon moment of the week or the rant or whatever you want to call it. But my thing this week is that it's cold. Hey, folks, we live in Ohio. So many people I see complaining about it, my wife included, a Cincinnati gal. It's like, are complaining, it's cold. Like, yeah, we live in Ohio. It's a cold weather state. We have winter here. January, February, March, sometimes.
I have a whole wardrobe just for it.
Right.
Extra, but, like, the very winter coats, scarves, hats.
But here's my thing. Like, we complain about it. That's one thing. But then the other thing is, like, schools are closing. And I understand, like, I want to be sensitive about this, certainly, because you have little kids out there, and some of these school systems, you have to walk a long way to get to the school or the school bus. So I understand from that standpoint. But I'm thinking back to when I was in school so many years ago. And I think, you know, you and I talked about this earlier. When you were in school in Youngstown, I'm from Southeast Ohio. I never, ever remember school being called off because of cold weather. Now, I knew it was called off because of snow and the roads and all that, but not because of cold weather. Did that ever happen to you in Youngstown?
No, we went to school every day. It could be a foot of snow. We're going.
But I mean, even like
but
the cold.
But cold too, everything.
Right. I mean, the schools have heat. Taxpayers pay for the heat. The HVAC,
I know that it's a very tough decision to make because there's a lot of poverty, you know, yeah. And you have to think about that, like free meals for children. They might not have food at home. We have parents who work, and if their children aren't going to school, they might not be able to go to work and they might not be able to get paid. These are very hard decisions, but I do feel like we're seeing more and more like, okay, it's cold and we're not going to have school.
Yeah, and that's... And again, I mean, you're right. That was a very eloquent way to say, like, yeah, maybe Jason, you should just shut up.
I did not say that.
But what I'm saying is, it's always been cold here in the winter. We've actually had it pretty well, I think, in the last few winters. You know, I think we had a cold snap in February, maybe last year, the year before, all these winters run together. But, you know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, I don't remember ever it would be this cold, but I don't remember school ever being called off in whatever system, school system it was. But I guess it's always, you know, good to err on the side of safety. And, you know, if they have the days to do it, then certainly do it. I guess what I'm saying is I'm telling myself to shut up. So.
Tomorrow's going to be Jack Coolidge, junior reporter.
Oh, is he coming in the office tomorrow?
I think he might have to.
Oh, that's great.
Well, don't forget Alex works here.
Now, do we have more time here, Phil? We got some more time? Yeah, we got more time. I don't know why. We're on a podcast. We're not on a live broadcast. So.
Oh, do you have another moment?
No, but Pete, I got to ask you something about kids. We got P. Diddy, Phil Diddy, and on the switch, the new switchboard.
Oh,
today.
It's so fancy.
If you could see it, folks, your eyes would be lighting
up. It's like
up.
Mission Control.
It is. It's like NASA headquarters.
I feel like they're using it so I don't seem so loud. Everyone at the newsroom knows I'm the loudest one.
But what you mentioned, so Jack Coolidge, potentially, is he 11 now?
He's 10.
10. If he comes in the office tomorrow, mm-hmm. Which will be today for those of you who are listening, will he be bringing his iPad?
Absolutely. Do you want me to get some work done or no?
Exactly. Okay. So this is what I'm asking about. So this is we're going to switch into the parental segment of the show. I found the iPad and my wife is on me about it because the iPad is the magic elixir. It doesn't matter how bad of a mood. I have a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old, both boys. Doesn't matter how much they're fighting, how bad of a mood they're in, how crazy they're being. If you hand them your phone or the iPad, it's just like it's calm. And I literally, you could give them that for 10 hours.
Agree.
And you could work for 10 straight hours.
It's also the flip side. Like you use it to make them be good. Because if you take it away, it's a disaster.
And we started doing that. We have done that. As my 6-year-old Reed calls it, the consequence. So his consequence is that he loses
absolutely
the iPad, which is not called the iPad. He calls, does Jack have a name for the iPad?
No, it's just the iPad.
Okay. We have a name for the iPad.
What is it?
Well, it's called Bobby. And the reason why.
Is Bobby a girl or a boy?
A boy.
Okay.
And the reason why is when we got the iPad, I don't know, 5 years ago, whenever Reed was maybe a year and a half, 2 years old, and he started on it, there was this show on YouTube Kids, whatever, called Bob the Train. And it was incredibly annoying. But he just,
YouTube shows are.
So I just started joking. I was like, I would always say, you want to watch Bobby the Train? I would call it Bobby. And then it just became like, he started calling the iPad Bobby, and we're calling the iPad Bobby.
Yeah,
this show needs to end. I'm talking about.
My iPhone has a name.
Naming. Oh, what is it?
Sparkles.
Boy.
The car, like if it ever gets disconnected from the car and you kind of have to reconnect it, it's like Sparkles is reconnected. Wait, is this a confessional, right? Well, it seems like a confessional.
We're
it's like a super
iPads,
small
we're naming
box.
Our iPhones. This is your new. Is this your new iPhone?
I just got a new iPhone with not all my contacts. So if I can call me and I'm like, hi, that's why.
Was your old iPhone Sparkles or is the new one Sparkles?
Oh, they're all Sparkles.
Oh, okay.
Can't change that now.
All right. We got to get out of this. We're talking about naming our iPads and our iPhones. Sherry, thank you so much for filling in today. Maybe we can just keep you here permanently and make it a three-person co-host.
No, you two are glorious together.
I'm kidding. I think you did a more than spectacular job filling in for Paul.
I'm happy to help. I listen every week. I am a loyal listener.
Thank you for your support and your special friend of the show. So thanks for sitting in. You were the perfect person to come in and fill in for Paul. So thank you. Thanks, everyone. Don't forget, download on iTunes. That's where most of our people are listening. You'll see, you could also find our podcasts linked in a lot of our stories and columns on Cincinnati.com. Don't forget to read Sherry Coolidge at Cincinnati.com. She's all over this FC thing and all things City Hall. And by the way, what's your Twitter handle at Sharon Coolidge, right?
Yeah, nice and easy to find me. It was once what?
It was once Moxie Girl.
I'm glad
Moxie
I changed
Girl.
It.
Was Moxie Girl 10 or something?
Yeah, I changed it. I'm glad I did.
I still love that. That's so you. That's such a you Twitter handle, but
easy's better.
Yeah, Sharon Coolidge, at Sharon Coolidge, at J. Williams Cincy. Send us some comments. Let us know what we're doing, what you like, what you don't like. This is a show, as Paul says, this is a show about you, the Cincinnatians. So thank you very much.